state your name.
The hour of 1 o'clock having arrived, I'll call this meeting of the House Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order. Welcome back after a nice weather weekend. And Representative Burkle, have you reviewed the minutes from the last meeting we had?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move the minutes.
All those in favor of the amendments from the last meeting signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And all by saying aye, yeah. Let's try that again. All in favor of the motion to approve the amendments, the minutes from the last meeting signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Very good. Opposed, same. The amendments and the, they've been adopted, the results of the last meeting. Yes, it is a Monday, and we're going to get going here, and hoping we can have some working together. Wasn't real happy what happened this morning in the Ways and Means Committee, but we'll see what happens as we move along this committee and some good bills along the way. First up this morning is a bill by Representative Meyer, and by the way, Representative Meyer, thanks for the cookies. And first bill up is House File 3579, and who would like to move the bill? I will move House File 3579, and welcome Representative Myers, and let's hear about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and Chair Hansen. I'm really excited to be here today. I was told I could do a couple puns because I did bring the cookies. So, you know, this is a bipartisan bill. I do want to thank Representative Burkle as well as Representative Smith and an unlikely pairing in the Senate of Senator McQuaid and Senator Westrum are carrying this bill and had a good hearing over there. Food shelves are near and dear to me. Been a volunteer for the last 10 years, sat on the board for the last several. I've seen the impact that our local communities can do, and I'm looking for always options and opportunities to grow the ability for food rescue or donations. Food shelves and hunger relief organizations face increasing demand, limited supply of protein-rich foods, and currently safe, nutritious eggs are being discarded due to date labeling restrictions here in Minnesota. So under current law, eggs may not be sold after their quality assurance date. The definition of sale includes donations, so eggs past their quality assurance date may not be donated. So this bill is looking for your support to modify the language that would allow eggs to be donated and distributed by hunger relief organizations past their quality assurance date to be donated past the labeled date. It's also going to maintain that food safety protection and expand access to that high protein that Minnesotans in need are looking for. And I do have one testifier.
Good afternoon. Identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Hansen and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today in support of House File 3579. My name is Jessica Francis, and I am the executive director of Open Cupboard, which has locations in Oakdale and Maplewood. We operate a food rescue program that includes 17 grocery partners, 8 wholesale distributor partners, and 5 convenience store partners. Through our 4 core programs, our today's harvest markets, our mobile food shelf, our drive-up service, and home delivery, Open Cupboard meets people where they are, ensuring fresh access to fresh and healthy food without cost or without barriers. Each week, more than 6,000 households turn to our today's harvest markets as a trusted and welcoming food resource. By rescuing food that would otherwise go to waste and partnering with farmers and retailers, volunteers and donors, Open Cupboard is building community resiliency. Our markets are centered on fresh food, items that are highly sought after and best when they reach the consumer quickly. Our markets are open 6 days a week without appointment or geographic restrictions, making fresh food accessible in a dignified and welcoming environment. Today, the need for that access is greater than ever. 1 in 5 Minnesotans cannot afford the food that they need. In 2025, Minnesotans made more than 9 million visits to food shelves, setting a record for the fourth consecutive year. I know at our Maplewood location on Friday, we hit a record level of service just on Friday. Rising grocery prices and reductions in critical food programs have driven demand to historic highs, and food banks and food shelves across the state are operating beyond capacity. At the same time, sourcing food is becoming more difficult due to supply chain disruptions, climate pressures, and other factors that are beyond our control. That's why the reliable, steady supply of donations from retail partners is so essential. More than 30% of the food that we distribute at Open Cupboard comes from retailers in our communities who donate items from every department every day. These partnerships ensure that good food becomes meals rather than landfill, nourishing people while reducing waste. They are efficient, safe, and proven systems, and any opportunity to expand them benefits everyone involved. And so that brings me to eggs. Statewide surveys, our shopper feedback, our daily experience proves that protein is one of the most in-demand and hardest to access food categories for food shelf shoppers. Eggs are one of the most versatile protein sources that we can offer, making them extremely popular. But due to high prices and limited supply, there have been times where we've gone months without a consistent or affordable source. This bill is a no-cost solution at a time of unprecedented need. If passed, it will allow retailers to donate eggs past the date on the package, eggs that are still safe and still usable so they can be included in the dairy donations and distributed through local food shelves across the state. This will create a more consistent and reliable source of this much-needed protein while also reducing food waste across our state. It's a win for retailers and food shelves, a win for the environment, a win for Minnesotans accessing food through our state's hunger relief system, and ultimately a win for Minnesota. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody from the audience who would care to testify on the bill? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions, either the testifier or the department or the author. So we have the expiration dates for a reason, for food safety. And the current law allows donation, but not continued sale. We have to stop selling medicine. And I'm assuming the reason for that is because of food safety. We don't sell it anymore. Or don't allow those sales. So why would we allow donation to poor people if there's a food safety concern?
Ms. Francis? Or Representative Meyer?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. You know, I worked with the department on this to make sure that we still have those parameters in place to ensure that food that's coming in is still safe. Working with them, they felt, you know, that they supported this language. As a, you know, doing a food rescue myself, you know, we run into those things. There's those extra parameters in there that, including the labeling and ensuring that they're maintained, that I think provides that safety.
Follow up, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe if the department could point to what they feel is enough protection on the food safety.
Anybody from the department? Want to come up? State your name, sir, and tell us where you work and who do you represent.
Yes, thank you. My name is Levi Mull. I am the Assistant Director for our Dairy, Meat, and Poultry and Egg Inspection Program at MDA, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. to answer the question, there's a difference between food safety and food quality, and in eggs particularly, there are many studies by either USDA AMS and FSIS, as well as Incredible Eggs, so it's the American Egg Board, that shows that eggs will last many weeks past the the quality assurance date, and it's really a quality issue, and that's what the quality assurance date actually means, is that it's a quality issue, not a food safety issue, and we are in full support of the language as written.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that about the food quality assurance. How do we ensure food safety for the donated eggs?
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, Chair and committee members. So the American Egg Board and USDA AMS requires that those eggs are refrigerated and they continue to maintain under refrigeration to keep the quality and the food safety of those eggs. Therefore, as the draft language in here, there's labeling requirements as well as refrigeration requirements, ensuring that as long as those eggs are refrigerated, they will last many weeks past that quality assurance date for food safety.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we have a variety of opinion on our side on this. Where is this going, Mr. Chair?
Oh, where are my notes here? General Register.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions from members? Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be quick, too. I just want to mention for the record that in a lot of cases, food you're seeing in the stores has either a best if purchased by, it's not necessarily an expiration date. It's more of a sell-by date. So it's just good to see that these eggs are going to end up being used by somebody who could really use them. In a lot of cases, consumers are bypassing because they have that choice. We heard that. We talked about that in committee a couple of weeks back. The choice of whether to buy the very fresh eggs or, go to the back of the shelf and put the egg, or buy the eggs that are a little less close to the expiration date or the best by date or the sell by date. So I think we have to differentiate between what people are actually buying and what we're actually donating here. This is a good bill and it really makes sense for folks who are in need. Thank you.
Comment, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the author, Representative Myers. Thank you for bringing this to me. I was happy to put my name on there as a co-author with you because members know I've talked about this a couple times in this committee. I think the primary focus we should have is helping people through a time where food insecurity is only growing worse in Minnesota. You go to your local food bank, ask them about usage rates, and they are increasing. And we are on the precipice of something that will increase even more. April 1st is when those work requirements I talked about a couple of weeks ago will go into effect for able-bodied folks under 65. The Strait of Hormuz has continued to be closed. We know that somewhere between 30 and 50% of the fertilizer that is globally traded goes through that strait at some point. So we know in this committee, if fertilizer goes up, food costs are going to rise. And if food costs rise, people aren't able to purchase the same amount of food they did previously. So a bill like this may seem small, but having more eggs at food banks could be lifelines for certain people in our state, Minnesotans, who need protein, and this is a very affordable protein that people can have access to. So thank you for this bill. I think this is the work we need to continue to do in this committee.
Thanks, Representative Smith. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, the final comments, Representative Meyer.
Yeah, I just want to thanks everybody for the discussion. As I said, I've seen firsthand the increase in our local food shelves. It could be at Channel One Food Bank. It could be at West Tonka Food Shelf in my district. But I think this bill has seen broad support both from retailers, producers, hunger relief organizations. We can increase those donations, help reduce food waste, and align with food safety. So I'm hoping the members can see this bill as a vote sunny side up.
After hearing that, I think the vote could be in doubt here, but all those in favor of, I would renew my motion that House File 3579 be referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
The motion passes and the bill is on its way. Thanks, Representative. Have to do some switching here. Mm-hmm.
All right, the next bill on the agenda is House File 3549. Chair Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
Madam Chair, yes, I'd like to move my vice chair. I'd like to move my bill, House File 3548. And there is an amendment.
48. Chair Anderson. We are on House File 3549.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Other pile. Yeah, Madam Vice Chair, I'd like to move the bill, House File 3549, and I do again have an amendment for this bill as well, Madam Chair.
All right, Chair Hansen moves that House File 3549 will be referred to the General Register. Chair Anderson, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yeah, I would, Madam Vice Chair, move the A1 amendment. And it just makes a minor change in the bill. I think gives it a little bit more teeth, if you will. And again, the purpose of the bill is to make sure the money in the grain indemnity fund stays there and is used only for the purposes intended of it from the original legislation, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Chair Anderson moves that H3549A1 amendment to get the bill in shape he would like. Is there any discussion? All right, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Anderson, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 3549 is a realization that things happen in the world that we can't control. And it has to do with farmers who sell product, in this case grain, and they don't get paid for it through no fault of their own. We had a company this past summer in Nebraska that declared bankruptcy. And the latest numbers as of this morning I got from the Department of Ag, the total claims put in by Minnesota producers are $1.1 million. And some of those claims are for grain sold outside the state. But so for claims here in Minnesota by Minnesota producers, is $842,000, which is a considerable sum of money. And the original Grain Indemnity Fund was passed bipartisanly, I think, 3 years ago. The state put in the original $10 million, and the fund has been growing ever since that time with interest. And I believe the amount in the fund right now is about $10.8 million. And it's growing with the interest, but now there will be money taken out of it when these claims are paid, and hopefully some of that is going to be restituted back again to the state. But language says the bill, the fund will not be fully funded until it gets to a total of $15 million. And what my bill says is that we can't take any money out of that fund for purposes other than is in the statute language. And those are listed from 1.11 to 1.15. And I'm just concerned that especially in these difficult times when a lot of production by farmers is done at below cost of production prices, that if we're to be hit again by another fee being collected to replenish this fund, it would not bode well, not sit well with the farmers in Minnesota. So all my bill does, Madam Chair, is to put a few guardrails around what the bill can be used for. And we did take some money out of it last year. I will say that it went to help cushion the increases for grain inspection fees of elevators in Minnesota. But with the bankruptcy of the firm in Nebraska, I think it illustrates how quickly the fund can be drawn down. And we need to keep the interest in that fund until it reaches the full funding of $15 million. And that, Madam Chair, is my bill.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Members, we have heard this bill and offered testimony in a previous meeting, but is there anyone who would like to testify for or against House File 3549 as amended? C
Seeing none, are there questions from members for the bill author? Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to recommend a no vote. Times are difficult all over. We have had several attempts to fund food programs here. It doesn't make sense to lock up money, $15 million for the future. I think we've got tough decisions ahead, maybe this session and future sessions, as the consequences of federal action or inaction are happening. So I would recommend a no vote.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Chair Hansen, I respectfully disagree with you that legislatures put money into funds for certain purposes, and I don't think it's right that we raid those funds. You tried, I think it was 2 years ago, to take money out of the fund for another purpose, and that was voted down. And like I say, we did take money last year for a related purpose, but I just think in this downturn in the ag economy, it would not do well to say that these funds are open to being raided and the interest taken from them to go to other purposes. The money in the fund should stay in the fund. I strongly believe that, and that's where I stand, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. All right, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for House Research. Is there anything that is preventing any legislator of any party in a future year of, let's say this bill passes, is there anything that is preventing a future legislative body from saying we're going to nullify this and then do something else with the funds anyways?
Thank you, Representative Frederick. Who would like to take that question?
Thank you, Chair. Representative Frederick, you are correct that this legislature cannot bind future legislatures, and future legislatures can just not withstand this provision.
Thank you. Representative Frederick?
That's it, Mr. Chair. That's, I think, why I scratched my head a little bit about that provision, because, next year, Chair Anderson could say, well, there's this other program that he becomes that really passionate about and could choose to take these funds for some, or like advocate for these funds for some other way, or anybody here could. So I don't quite understand that provision. And I think because of that, it doesn't make sense to me. And I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative Frederick, you raise a valid point. Well, I knew that, but I think this would send a message to at least think long and hard about taking money out of the fund. Yes, it can be taken. I understand that. But this language, I think, would kind of put a parameter around it and saying, unless it's a real dire situation, I don't think the money should be touched. And I agree that I can't determine what future legislatures do. But I think this bill just sends a message that the intent of this body would be to keep the money intact for its intended purpose.
All right, does anyone else have any questions or comment? Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Chair Harder, and thank you for this bill, Chair Anderson. I think in the last few years, we've seen a number of bankruptcies that have affected farmers on the ground. I've had to wait a long time for their money if they got any and all. In a lot of cases before this fund, I think the average was maybe, and maybe the department could verify, but if I remember, it was 11%. Roughly is what folks would get in the situation where you had a bankruptcy and farmers were affected. So I hope folks are listening out there. If you're in rural areas, I specifically think of Kitson County when we had an elevator that went bankrupt up there, and we had folks waiting for 2 years and got about 10% of their money. So the fund's set up for a purpose. We have funds set up for purposes all over this legislature. I hope our rural areas are listening to how this vote goes today. We set up this indemnity account for a reason, and it's really to protect folks who really have no control over a bankrupt elevator. So with that, I just hope that there's support, especially from rural members. If you're thinking about your farmers right now and the situations they're in, and the fact that they could be waiting for money with a bank hovering over them, waiting for their money, it's important we keep this fund intact. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Burkle. Representative Gottfried.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this good discussion today. And, you know, I agree with you, Representative Burkle. This is the grain indemnity fund, and I think its purpose is already written within the title of the fund itself. So much like my colleague, Representative Frederick, I don't understand a piece of legislation that says, yep, this is indeed the grain indemnity fund that we are have money in. This bill doesn't feel like it actually addresses a problem that we have. The grain indemnity fund is the grain indemnity fund, and nothing that we do in this bill today prevents future legislatures from tapping into it or not tapping into it. So I appreciate the intent of the bill, but I don't know that it actually accomplishes what the goal is here today. And it does not feel like an effective piece of legislation to prevent what it is trying to prevent. And for that, I will be voting no on this. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Just a final word. The fund was created with general fund, general tax dollars.
Representative Gander.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one thing that this specific wording does accomplish is it creates a recommendation, which, again, future legislatures would not be bound to just sort of mechanically, how are we going to operate this fund? It's nowhere in there, elsewhere, to say that if it's below $15 million, that we won't take money for other purposes. If it's over $15 million, we could. So it really is a novel addition to the bill. It is not redundant. It is not superfluous. It really does create an additional component that is not there already. Thank you.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and last comment. Yes, Representative Hansen, the fund was created with general fund dollars. It is maintained by farmers from this point on, and that's the problem here. To Representative Gonfrey's point, if the fund drops under $8 million and farmers have to kick back in to build that fund back up, the concern then is over time, in a longer period of time, farmers are going to be, that fund's going to be rated in its farm dollars. So I concur with Chair Hansen's comment about general fund dollars, but going forward, it'll be farmers' dollars. Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments from committee members? Seeing none, Chair Anderson, do you have any concluding remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like a roll call on this vote, please. And the testimony has been interesting. And, you know, we can't bind future legislatures. So what if the fund got down to $5 million? There are really no guardrails as to when it could be, I'll use the word, rated or not. And current law gives Commissioner Peterson the authority on, I believe it's July 1st of any year that the fund drops below $8 million. And I don't think anybody in that position would relish the thought of adding a fee onto the production that farmers sell, especially in these times of really difficult finances for people in agriculture. I renew my motion that this bill would put a little more teeth into not being as apt to raid this fund in future years. And it would be my hope, Madam Chair, that future ag committees would see this as a fund that they should not raid, even though there's nothing that prevents that from being done. But again, being the ag committee, advocating on behalf of farmers and all, I think this bill would make sense and provide some comfort as this fund sits there, going to be utilized now for about $1 million to pay this latest bankruptcy. get the fund down to close to $9 million, and one more instance to put it down to the area where it may have to be the fee assessed on farmers. So with that, again, Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 3549, as amended, be referred to the General Register.
All right, Chair Anderson renews his motion that House File 3549, as amended, be referred to the General Register. A roll call being requested. There will be a roll call.
Representative Anderson.
Oh, Anderson, aye.
Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Egbadje.
No.
Representative Burkle.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
No.
Representative Gander.
Aye.
Representative Gottfried.
No.
Representative Jacob.
Aye.
Representative Lawrence.
Lawrence, aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, no.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson, aye.
Representative Vang.
No.
All right, there being seven ayes and seven nays, the motion lacks an affirmative vote of the majority of the committee membership, and the motion does not prevail. And the bill will be laid over. All right.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask counsel if in a bill does not meet the majority that it's failed, correct, versus being laid over.
Chair, I'm not sure right now. If you get look a bit, look for it.
This bill has been heard before and it has been laid over. So my recommendation is that the bill should be laid over for future consideration. Chair Hansen.
Madam Chair, we had bills last week that died on a tie vote and were announced as dying on a tie vote. A tie vote is, my understanding under the agreement, is a tie vote is a die.
All right, committee. Any bill can be picked up and moved by majority of members when a bill has been laid over or failed. other committees have been doing it the same way, where they have laid over bills that have not received a majority, and I will reiterate, this bill will be laid over for future consideration.
Madam Chair, parliamentary inquiry.
Chair Hansen.
So with that interpretation, does that mean that any amendment that failed on a tie vote or any bill that previously failed on a tie vote in this committee is eligible for future consideration if it received a majority vote, if it would receive a majority vote in the future?
Chair Hansen, the answer would be yes, if the majority of the committee approves. All right. Thank you. Bill's laid over. All right. Moving on to House File 3548. Chair Hansen moves that House File 3548 be re-referred to the General Register. Chair Hansen, would you like to move your amendment?
I think he would.
I meant. I'm sorry. I meant to say Chair Anderson. I apologize.
Madam Chair, at least we can smile in this committee. I move that the House File 3548. You know, Madam Chair, we had a discussion briefly. I was going to move to refer this to the General Register. Then we had a discussion that, being that it does pertain to some finances, I would ask nonpartisan staff if this could be part of a future bill because of the financial consideration, or does it have to meet the deadline of Friday?
All right, Mr. Savory.
Chair and members, this bill in its current form or in an amended form could certainly be included in a omnibus major finance bill and meet their deadline if that was the committee's prerogative to do so.
Chair Anderson, would you like to change the motion?
Yes, I would move that House File 3548 be referred to stay here in committee, layover.
Laid over. All right. All right, thank you. Chair Anderson, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have the A1 amendment here, and it is a DE. And we've done a lot of work on this since the first time this bill was heard.
Chair Anderson, I apologize for interrupting you, but we have the DE amendment.
Yeah.
We should take that one up first.
Yeah. The DE1, Madam Chair. I would like to move the DE1 amendment.
All right, fantastic. Chair Anderson moves the DE amendment to your amendment, Chair Anderson. All right, this is okay. Chair Anderson, there is also an A3 to the DE amendment.
Madam Chair, the A3 amendment did not make deadline. I was visiting or discussing the bill with Chair Vang on Friday. It didn't make the deadline. So it's up to Chair Hansen and I if we would accept this. And it does make several changes, some that we agreed to, and that would be amended to the DE1.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, I think I appreciate that you've moved to lay it over, because I think you and Representative Vang have been working.
Yeah.
This provides, it's hard to, you know, kind of do this by amendment on short notice. And But I think if your intent is to keep working, the A3, I guess I would ask just for comment from Representative Vang, but I'm inclined for you to be able to put the whole thing together so we can look at the bill as it is, and you can continue to be working as we work on the budget. But I want to check with Representative Vang on her thoughts on that.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Chair Hansen, you are correct. And thank you, Chair Anderson, for working with me over the weekend on this too as well. And so happy to put it in the shape that the author would like it to be first, and we can have further discussion.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then so Chair Anderson, we would, even though it's after deadline, we would support the A3 to the DE1, you know, to get the whole thing in the shape you would like.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Is there any further discussion on the A3? If not, Representative Anderson, would you like to explain the A3?
Well, there's some punctuation changes, but the main change would be on page 4, line 12. And this is one area that we're still discussing. And I met with the department, and I've met with Land Stewardship, Farmers Union, and discussing how much to keep in reserve for those that may have a purchase agreement. The department talked about 50%. Land Stewardship mentioned 25%. Chair Vang wasn't comfortable with either of those numbers. And my amendment dropped it down to 40%, but then the A3 adds the words may reserve up to 40%. So I think that gives the department a lot of leeway in how they would handle those applications, both those that had a purchase agreement and those that didn't. The original language was requested by the department, and again, we're making a compromise here and with that language, but again, that's not been totally agreed to yet. But I think the highlight of the bill and the biggest thing as far as I'm concerned would be on the page 4, lines 26 through 30. And going back into the past history of this program, I got this from the department that a lot of the funds have been turned back unused because they cancel out at the end of the 2-year biennium. So in 2023, $21,500 was canceled back to the general fund. And last year in 2025, $801,000 was not used and canceled back to the general fund. And what this does is moves out the date that the department can still use the funding. It doesn't cancel out, and it's available until June 30th, 2029. And I think that could be extended to June 30th of 2030. So that is a key part of the bill that would allow the funds to be used over multiple years and not be turned back to the general fund. So I think that's one provision we all would get behind and support. And with that, Madam Chair, I would stand for questions.
All right, Chair Anderson moves that H3548 A3 amendment. Is there any discussion from members? Representative Abaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson. I understand that there's still ongoing conversations with this bill, but I do at least want to still continue to maintain for the record that the original purpose of this program was to repair a harm and a damage that was done for farmers that did not have access to capital and that could not, you know, make down payments to be able to purchase land for their farms. I still am a little bit concerned that the purpose of your bill language is to further expand this program and to kind of make it like any other farm assistance program that we have, which I can understand why people might think that what is the problem in that. But to me, I think the problem in that is that we have situations in a variety of areas, but particularly in agriculture, where people have been left out of the agriculture experience and the work that they've been able to do has not been recognized, and they have not been able to just simply walk into banks and get loans or funding to be able to purchase land. And so that is why this program was originally created, to help those folks who don't have that same access and opportunity. And so while I encourage you to continue working with Representative Vang and others to maintain the integrity of this program, I still at least want to put it out there that the way that this can be read is essentially trying to remove this program that was meant for a specific purpose to make it to a wider general purpose, and we already have general farm assistance for that. So I just want to make sure that that's on the record as conversations continue. Thanks.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Chair. I would ask the representative what program she's referring to that already benefit general agriculture.
Representative Abaje.
I mean, I think we've heard in this committee plenty of programs that support either, fertilization or dairy farmers or meat packing, all of these types of things. These are opportunities where all types of folks can get in there. This program was created specifically for farmers, young farmers, black and brown farmers, people who are underrepresented throughout society, who do not have that same type of access to just walk into a bank and get a loan. So I was just saying that as you continue your conversations, which I appreciate, I think just to kind of keep in mind what the original purpose of this program was and not to dilute that purpose.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think we need to be a little bit cautious there. Some of the original language of this bill has been challenged and the language was changed. So again, I think we need to be careful about trying to earmark some of these funds. And what this does, it helps farmers. We need all farmers, and I will say that till the cows come home. And this bill is designed to help farmers.
Anything further, Representative Abaje? All right, Representative Gander.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just have a question, and that is, in previous versions, there was a net worth cap that would kind of restrict who may qualify for this, and then the net worth cap went away. Could I ask what the rationale was behind taking off the net worth cap for people who might qualify for this? Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative. That particular provision has been taken out at the behest of Chair Vang, so you'd have to ask her that question.
Representative Gander?
Madam Chair, I wonder if Representative Vang would be willing to share.
Representative Vang?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Gander, for your question. I'm not 100% sold on including this provision. I think part of it is because it's hard for me to envision what the impact could look like or unintended potential consequences. I've seen how asset limitations have been used in terms of other programs or in county services that has negatively impacted how people utilize the program as well. And so I think just, I can be further convinced, but I think for now, just because I'm not 100% sold on it, then it's rather, I'd rather not have it on there.
Representative Gander.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad to think that that could be part of a continued conversation as to accomplish the objective, as Representative Agbaji pointed out, to kind of target who could benefit from this. Thanks.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the A3 amendment is adopted. We are now on the H3548DE1 amendment as amended. Chair Anderson, would you like to explain the DE1 before the committee acts on its adoption?
Well, we've pretty well talked through key parts of it. And in the effort to work with the all parties and compromise, I did take out or give up on my plan to make it a two-tier grant program with a larger grant, larger acreage, getting a larger grant. I gave up that provision. In the last time the bill was heard, there was a lot of discussion about the zoning requirements, and that still remains in the bill in terms of if it's in a commercial zoned area, commercially zoned area, they'd have to have a business plan with the application. And if the farmland is in the boundaries of a statutory or home rule charter city, the eligible farmer must earn an annual revenue of at least $1,000 in his farming operation. So that remains in the bill. And, you know, so again, changes made. And I'll say up front, the one other part that we're not in agreement on is including the cultivation of cannabis or marijuana in the bill, and that has been in the original bill. And it's my personal opinion that we don't need to be incentivizing the growing of cannabis, and that's just my personal feeling. And the other side or other folks strongly disagree with me on that. So again, that's an area where we may have to discuss further and reach a compromise, but that's one of the remaining sticky points to coming up with an agreement to this bill. With that, I'll stand for questions.
All right, thank you, Chair Anderson. We have three testifiers who would like to speak to the DE1 amendment as amended. And we will first start with Kazora Berry, Farm Director from Big River Farms. Please come to the testifiers table, state your name, and then begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kazuo Berry, but you could say Kazuo or Kazuo is fine. In committee, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to come in. Testify today. I'm the farm director at the food group. We are a nonprofit, and I oversee all of our sustainable agricultural department. And Big River Farms is one of those programs. We're located in Marina, St. Croix, where we run an incubator training program. And an incubator is not an egg chamber. In this instance, it's actually a business model where we allow farmers to come and utilize the infrastructure and the land access piece to grow their business there. But we have a comprehensive training program that is certified under the rural authority. So meaning if farmers go through our training program, should they ever seek out funding opportunities through the state and the county, then our program and our curriculum basically certifies that. Every year we serve about 25 to 30 small farms, and they go through our program. And we average about 2 to 3 farms that actually, we call it like graduate, where they find land, either long-term or they secure it through like buying land. And the buying part is always more rare because it's harder to do so, especially for farmers that just face so much barriers and challenges, which fits the profile of all of our farmers. They are 100% of them work off-farm, so they farm, but they also have off-farm jobs. And so it's really challenging for them to continue to scale up and build their businesses without adequate support and resources. So basically with the land access piece with our program, we do allow, you know, leasing to a certain amount of time, but farmers want to scale up. Farmers are only allowed to farm up to 2 acres at Big River Farms, but if they can buy land elsewhere, they are basically securing land for themselves where they can get, you know, more acreage and they can increase their businesses. And also it ensures the security for investment and return. So basically if farmers own land, they can invest by perennial systems, meaning growing asparagus, strawberries, or, you know, fruit trees, that would be theirs. Whereas if they are renting land and they're doing that, that investment doesn't come back to them because the landlord can essentially just kick them off of the land. Or, you know, they can be displaced and et cetera. The down payment assistance, though, I would say this grant is vital to many of our farmers, as land access has been named as the top barrier to farming for them. I would say that when this program came out a couple of years ago, it was a perfect timing for one of our farmers who spent already a couple of years looking for land, and just the affordability or finding the land that fits her need for her farming. This program came just in time for her to be able to buy it with the support of this program. And, you know, she started with just selling to Roseville High School or Roseville area. Now she's selling at Mill City. She has multiple wholesale contracts, and she just moved her farm to that land from Big Bear Farms last year. So this program is not that it's not meaningful at all. It is very meaningful to all of the farmers that can find a way to access this. We support the addition of the readiness requirements for the applicants. This, you know, it really reflects and aligns with like the programming that we have at Big Bear Farms. So we train our farmers so that they are ready to be able to receive this kind of funding and support. And we have had some farmers who actually remain in our program for longer than their goal desired because they just simply cannot find the land that works for them, or, you know, multiple, like oftentimes our farmers are trying to access Farm Service Agency's direct loan services, and it's really hard to get that approval as quickly. So getting the approval to align with the needs of the down payment assistance doesn't always, the timing doesn't always fit. So we're supporting and asking for that extension. Typically, the program runs from like October through April, and that's only 6 months. And that's also, we live in Minnesota, so like it's snowing in winter time, and so it's really hard to find land where you can imagine that you're going to be growing on that soil if you cannot see that soil. So really requesting for an extension for that time, and we support that. And then we also support the prioritization for applicants that have farm sales between 1,000 to 100,000. And that will hopefully ensure that our farmers, that people who actually do want to farm and build their business, are the priorities of this project and program. And lastly, the grant that is, you know, your adjustment for it to be awarded up to 40% of the purchase price is better than basing it on acreage. And we do recommend keeping the cap at $20,000 so that we can ensure that more farmers can access this. And we do know that $20,000 is meaningful no matter the price range of the land that the farmers are seeking. And so, again, thank you so much for hearing this out, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Stu Lowry from Director of Government Affairs, Minnesota Farmers Union. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Harder and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Lowry, Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And on behalf of our organization and our members, I want to thank this committee for your continued work to strengthen the down payment assistance program. This is a powerful program, both for those who are selected to receive a grant and for those communities that they end up farming in. We all know this here, but it bears repeating that it's hard to earn a good living as a farmer. You know, most farms aren't hosting a retirement plan or those kind of benefits. Instead, the promise of agriculture is being able to own your land and invest in that, right? That's also what allows you to invest in infrastructure, as Kazua talked about, to invest in the health of the soil and to invest in your community. So I really think we're all stronger when folks can achieve that dream of farm ownership. And I want to thank Chair Vang, because in creating this program, she created that opportunity for so many folks that wouldn't have been there otherwise. So, you know, the challenge, of course, as with so many programs that are created, right, is that there's a limited amount of money, and you have to choose who receives it and who doesn't. In this case, that's by a lottery, and so not everyone gets that grant. In fact, a significant proportion don't get the grant. So from our perspective, the most important thing is to ensure that the money that you all fought for last session, the $1.2 million for this upcoming year, gets out to farmers who can go use that and make sure that they're getting on the land. So, you know, that, and to echo other testifiers, but means some basic readiness requirements. It also means extending that timeline as we've talked about. And I'll just close. This is a powerful program. I've heard both from members who've received it and are thrilled, folks who hope to receive it in a future round. I'll also say that the $20,000 for, you know, even a costly piece of property is really significant. And it isn't just in gaining that tenure. tenure, anything that you're able to put into that down payment also makes it more likely that you're successful and more profitable over the long term because it's lowering that monthly mortgage payment. So thank you to this committee. Thank you to Co-Chair Anderson for your work and continued conversation to strengthen this program, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And last, we have Laura Schreiber from the Land Stewardship Project. Schreiber, I apologize. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Harder and committee members. My name is Laura Schreiber with the Land Stewardship Project. And thank you to Rep. Anderson for your work on this bill and really appreciate the ability to have a conversation and work through different language recommendations. So as you've heard, this program was established in 2023, and Minnesota really did become a leader in offering this program. And to date, we've been able to help 112 farmers buy land, whereas we have heard, though, that last grant cycle, there was $800,000 that had to be returned due to primarily two main reasons, the allotted time and then readiness of those applicants. So really greatly appreciate adding the readiness requirements to make sure applicants are in the best position to be successful with this grant and have a plan for their farm business. Also, as you heard last year from Farmer Derek Ellis, the timeline for finding land once farmers are awarded this grant can be tight. Farmers typically have 6 months to find land, but if they're piecing together those FSA loans and largely looking for land, as you heard from Kajua, over the winter can be difficult. And last year, 37% of grantees who weren't able to utilize funding attributed that to the timeline. So being able to extend that timeline is really valuable, and I think one of the bigger things that we can do this year. So thank you for that inclusion. A few suggestions just to offer for the set-aside, adding in the set-aside for priority applicants, so those who are making $1,000 to $100,000 in farm sales, just be able to prioritize this funding to go to folks who need it most. And really appreciate the work from Rep. Anderson to move from the acreage-based payment to instead base the award on 40% of the purchase price. And as Mr. Laurie recommended, $20,000 is, I think, a really impactful funding amount. So knowing that there has been over 400 applicants for this program, 112 people able to actually receive the award, recommend capping it at that $20,000 so more farmers can be able to go out and purchase land. So thank you again to the committee's continued work on this program. It is incredibly helpful for so many farmers. So happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify to the DE1 amendment as amended? Seeing none, we'll move on to member questions, and we will start with Representative Gottfried.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for your work on this bill and working with Representative Vang as well. I did want to ask a little bit about the exclusion of cannabis in for this program, and so I guess my question is this a personal preference, or is this is there like a policy reason behind the exclusion for cannabis? Did this come from the agency, or did this is this your personal preference? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Representative, I guess I'd have to say it's my personal preference, and I do have to wonder, when this bill was passed a couple of years ago with this language in it, at that time I believe it was still probably federally against the law to grow it. I'm not sure on that, but I suspect that may be the case, because it was just recently the feds ruled that it could be grown. So that would be my thought, that we don't need to incentivize the production of that particular crop, in my opinion.
Representative Gottfried.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for that answer. No, I appreciate it, Chair, for that answer. No, I appreciate it. And to from my perspective, you know, I'm not a cannabis user, and I do think emphasizing agriculture that grows food is where my preferences would lie. But at the same time, you know, I do wonder if we're doing a disservice by putting this caveat into this particular bill. Just a couple of things to throw out there. As we're talking about entry of small farmers into, various agricultural industries, including the cannabis industry, Going back to the intended purpose of this program as it was originally crafted, you know, we are seeing an underrepresentation of black and brown farmers. And this holds true within the cannabis industry as well. I just pulled up some quick statistics. 38% of cannabis business owners are people of color, yet only 18% of total funding goes to, quote unquote, minority-owned businesses. And so there's a steep underrepresentation as far as the funding that they receive. And I think, well, maybe not the intended purpose of this carve-out from this program, I think that only furthers that trend. And then if we're talking about more largely about the consolidation of the cannabis industry, cannabis is a growing industry throughout our entire country right now. And between 2020 and 2023, we saw a market consolidation of the top 20 brands throughout the country control from 26% of the market share in 2020 up to 35% of the market share in 2023. We do not yet have numbers in 2026, but I imagine that consolidation will continue. So as we're talking about how do we get smaller farmers into the agriculture business, I don't know that we should be excluding industries that are legal as we are continuing to have these conversations and preventing Minnesotan farmers from entering a $149 billion industry. I think, I would highly encourage you to talk to Representative West, Representative Hansen about their work that they have done in the cannabis industry and trying to set that up here. I don't think that this exclusion really serves the market development that we are trying to do in the state of Minnesota as it pertains to legal cannabis. So just would encourage as you continue to have these conversations to keep those things in mind. And with that, thank you, Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen, or Anderson, excuse me, I'm doing it too. Chair Anderson and Chair Harder, thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Well, I'm sure Chair Hansen agrees with me on this one, but anyway, you know, a couple of things. I'm not trying to prevent cannabis growing, certainly not trying to prevent it. I'm just saying, should we be incentivizing it? There's a difference. The other thing you mentioned, this program has been in effect for 3 years, and you say there's been very little impact by those that grow cannabis. Well, they've had access to the program for 3 years, and evidently haven't made big inroads in utilizing the program. So again, it's an area we're going to be discussing and working on. So thank you.
Any other members have questions about the DE1 amendment? Hearing none, Chair Anderson renews his motion to adopt the H3548 DE1 amendment as amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Final comments?
No, I'm getting there.
Pardon?
We're on the adoption of the DE1.
Okay.
Okay. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment as amendment is adopted. We are now on House File 3548 as amended. Is there any further discussion? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, you'll keep working with Representative Vang, is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Well. All right, Chair Anderson, would you like to renew your motion? Slide over. All right.
Just a couple of final comments, Chair.
Yes, Chair Anderson.
Talked about the intent, original intent of this program, and I agree with that. But yet, on the previous bill, I was told that you can't dictate what future legislatures do. So this is somewhat similar in that, on one hand, my colleagues are saying, well, you can't solidify this program because future legislators can change it. But now in this bill, you're saying, well, that's not the intent of the program, so we can't change it that way either. So it's a little bit of, I think, not quite being fair to either of the bills. And my last comment, Madam Chair, the comment was raised that the priority was for smaller farmers, and I would draw members' attention to page 3, line 34, that says a priority will be given those that have incomes, you know, between $100,000 and $100,000, and who produce industrial hemp, cannabis, crop block grant, fruit, vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, medicinal plants, culinary herbs, spices, horticulture crops, floriculture crops, and nursery crops. That's still in the bill. That language is still in the bill, ladies and gentlemen. So with that, Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House file is amended, 3548 be laid over.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. House file 3548 as amended is laid over.
Members, next item on the agenda is an informational hearing on some proposed language regarding plant and soil amendments. Members, the bill draft is in your meeting material. The bill will be in today's bill introductions. And Vice Chair Harder, please tell us about your bill that'll be introduced yet this afternoon. Chair Harder.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and members, for having this informational hearing today. I'm here to discuss the issue with how Minnesota currently regulates soil and plant amendments and how this bill, when it's introduced, offers a practical, common sense solution. Today, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture requires product labels to include both active and inert ingredients along with their amounts. Currently, Minnesota is the only state in the country with this requirement. Due to this difference, Minnesota's system is out of step with the rest of the country. It creates unnecessary complexity for manufacturers and additional administrative work for the department. While the department has worked collaboratively with companies to collect needed information, this process requires ongoing back and forth and is not the most efficient use of time or resources. And this bill will fix that efficiency. And with me, I have a testifier who will continue.
Very good. Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lee Helgen, the Executive Director with the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. We're the ag retailers and co-ops that will supply and sell many of these soil and plant amendments. Currently, the way the regulations are structured, if you are selling one of these biological enhancements or soil amendments, you would be required to provide very precise volume, weight, kind of measurements for all of the inert ingredients. And typically that might be something that would be a proprietary business kind of information that wouldn't be shared. The bill does label quite clearly all of the active ingredients, what would be listed, its use, and the label instructions. So our crop advisors would still be able to provide good information to the growers on here's what the product would do, but not require the additional work across all of these new products to list all of the inert ingredients or carriers or other things that might be there that are kind of the business trade secrets for that. So this provides some clarity around that. The standards that are laid out would be very consistent with our industry practices around the labeling requirements. There would also be this requirement of a certificate of compensation that would allow the MDA staff to see exactly what's there so they could understand that, and if there were any hazardous or things that might need to be flagged, they could find that in that certificate. So it's an intent to try to be clear about it, and the reason for the bill is that the legislative fix would be easier than trying to walk through some sort of complicated ongoing regulatory process. In the meantime, there's hundreds of products out there where this labeling would provide clarity and certainty, and they would continue to be available in the Minnesota market space to help our growers.
Thanks, Mr. Helgen. See no questions, we'll move on to David Boudreau, who is with us, I hope. Mr. Boudreau.
Remotely. Hi, everyone. Hi, my name is David Vaudreau.
Go ahead.
And can you hear me? Hear me?
Yeah, okay, yes, great. Go ahead, sir.
So, Co-Chair Anderson, Co-Chair Hansen, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today. My name is David Vaudreau. I'm with the firm DC Legislative and Regulatory Services, DCLRS. DCLRS works as a consultant to both the Biostimulant Council, which is part of the Fertilizer Institute, and RISE, which stands for Responsible Industry for a Sound Environment. Their member companies produce non-agricultural specialty fertilizers. I'm joining you today in support of Vice Chair Harder's legislative proposal, which seeks to clarify plant and soil amendment labeling requirements. Soil and plant amendments and beneficial substances help provide a better growing environment for a wide variety of crops, as well as for turf and ornamental uses. As an example, some of these products can be used to help with nitrogen uptake and phosphorus solubilizing, which reduces the amount of fertilizer that is needed and also can improve the efficiency of its application. Our firm and our trade association clients have been working for over 15 years to support uniform labeling for beneficial substances and related products, which include many plant and soil amendments. We are very supportive of the work the American Association of Plant Food Control Officials, APCO, which has undertaken to develop a model bill and guidance on label requirements for these types of products. This model bill was passed by APCO in February of 2024, has already been implemented in over a dozen states. One of the issues the soil and plant amendment legislative proposal will address relates to how these products are labeled. Minnesota currently is the only state that requires a product to include both the active and the inert ingredients. And inert ingredients, for those who are less familiar, they're materials that are added to a product that prevent clumping. They can promote survival of living organisms in the soil and promote stability of products. The AFCO model bill does not require that inert ingredients be listed. This legislative proposal would require that labeling be consistent across products and require that manufacturers submit confidential certificate of composition for registration. This will save MDA time and resources by eliminating back and forth correspondence with manufacturers to answer additional labeling questions. This would also help align Minnesota's guidelines with those of APCO, leading to more uniformity across the states. Once again, we greatly appreciate Vice Chair Harder for bringing this legislative proposal forward and to the committee's attention. Thank you again for the opportunity to join you, and I'm glad to stand for any questions. We really appreciate your support on this bill.
Thanks, Mr. Woodrow. Anybody in the audience who would care to testify or comment on the bill? Seeing none, any members of the committee? Representative Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just noticed that our State Department's not on the testifier list. Was curious if they might give a comment as far as the necessity and any repercussions this legislation might have for them.
If they could come up. Welcome, Mr. Jessup. Identify yourself and proceed.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Peter Chesson. I'm Assistant Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The department does not have a position on this particular piece of legislation. I will say that we were asked for and did provide feedback on the language that is contained in this bill. We do not have any particular concerns with the language in the bill. We also do have some policy proposals this session that talk about the uniformity. We're trying to get uniform definitions in line with the APCO. So we do have a policy bill that does pertain to the subject, but we don't have a position on this bill.
Representative Lawrence, no follow-up? Okay. Any other questions? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think I'm glad this is an informational hearing. It's important to really think through this, particularly relating to the definition of inert ingredient. Because we know, you know, this is modeled APCO. I'm familiar with APCO. This is modeled after the pesticide law.
the pesticide law has the active ingredient and then the inert ingredients. And those inert ingredients, you just say they're inert. They could be something else. They could be PFAS. They could be other products, but they're inert because you label them because they are not the active pesticidal compound. So to take that into fertilizer and plant amendments, so we've spoke in this committee before about malorganite, sewage sludge, having components of PFAS in it. So if we allow only the active ingredient, that which provides the N, P, and K, versus the inert, we just say it's inert. Inert doesn't mean that it's not toxic, doesn't mean that it's not active. It just says it's not what you're paying for. It's not the fertilizer or it's not the pesticide that you're paying for. So it could be, you know, 1300 and the label, and it could have 50 pounds of active ingredient and then X number of pounds of other inert ingredients that only by law we're saying are inert, not by science, not by chemistry, not by reality, only by law saying it's inert. So I think we have to tread very carefully on this, particularly as there are a number of people that are coming, number of companies that are coming into this arena with biologics, but I'm concerned actually about the fertilizer itself and what people are buying over the counter, that if we label things as inert versus what we have in Minnesota now as labeling the inert ingredients, what else is in that bag? We just fall into this deregulation, rush to deregulation that's happening at the federal level and is being picked up in state after state.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Jessup, could you answer a question then? If the inert ingredients are not made public, does the department still know what they are when they test these fertilizers or chemicals?
Mr. Chair, committee, that is correct. I mean, currently we work with registrants to determine what are both active and inert ingredients in all the products that we regulate. Under, I believe, the language of this bill, they would be required to submit a certificate of composition, which again would list, should list the inert ingredients as well. It's something that our team works on already in terms of understanding what is in the products we regulate.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just Mr. Kethis. But the public wouldn't know anymore, right? It just would say inert. The label wouldn't define the inerts. You would know in the department what the inerts are, but when they go and buy it, it would say inert ingredient.
Mr. Jessup?
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Hansen, under this bill, that would be correct.
But yet somebody would know, and I would hope the department would take care of us. Question from Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is for the department also. So you're correct. In lines 3.9 and 3.10, it shows about that certificate of composition that describes the amount and formulas of each inert ingredient and beneficial substance included in the formula. So you receive that in a kind of a confidential manner. It's not packaged, labeled like that. Then what do you do with that information? If it was a prohibited substance or other dangerous component, would you take action upon that or just file it away somewhere? Thank you.
Mr. Jessup?
Co-Chair Anderson and Representative Gardner, I'd actually, if it's okay with the committee, I'd ask for one of my colleagues who actually runs the program to come up and can walk you through that process and how thorough it is.
Okay. Our clock is ticking. This is an informational hearing. We'd like to hear your answer. Go ahead, ma'am. Identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tricia Leaf. I'm the manager of the pesticide non-point section, as well as our unit that registers all pesticides and fertilizers. So any inert ingredients that we receive in the certificate of composition would continue to go through a review process the same way they currently do. And anything that is an ingredient of concern, we would go back to the registrant. In addition, all manufacturers are required to let us know if the product contains intentionally added PFAS, regardless of whether it is listed on the label or not.
Thank you very much. Representative Gander.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No further questions.
Thanks. With that, Chair Harder, any closing comments? Thank you for your presentation. Thank you also to your testifiers.
Yes, thank you, Chair Anderson and members, for hearing this information today. Once this bill is introduced, it will improve efficiency and aligns Minnesota with national standards and maintains regulatory oversight and supports both innovation and agriculture productivity. By streamlining the process, the bill allows the department to focus its resources where they matter, reviewing products and ensuring that they are safe and effective. Importantly, this bill does not reduce transparency for consumers. What users currently see on labels will not change. And thank you again for your time and consideration.
Next bill on the agenda, House File 3566. Vice Chair Harder, please move your bill.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and members. We have heard this bill before in the committee. And just a reminder that this bill came up because of an article that came out, and yes, it was in 2019, where there was some vandalism. And so from there, this bill was created. And I believe right now the article that this bill stems from is being passed out to you to review. And there have been some questions about that perhaps public safety should review because there is a fine with that. And so I move that House File 3566 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy.
Any questions for the bill author? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think with this going to public safety, we have some members with a variety of concerns on this. You know, I think our members are going to vote their conscience on this when it's going to public safety. I would just state, you know, this is a seven-year-old article that I think in the prior committee we no one was convicted, no one was charged. So we have reporting, but without a charge or conviction. I think with the motion moving to public safety, we'll have a variety of votes.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. We did offer a public testimony in a previous meeting on this bill, but we'll offer one more time. Is there anybody in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 3566? Seeing none, Vice Chair Harder, closing comments, and to please renew your motion.
Yes, thank you, Chair Anderson and members again for listening to the bill and the information that was handed out to you, and I renew my motion that House File 3566 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy.
Vice Chair Harder, that is her motion. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to public safety. Thank you. Next up, House File 4388, Representative Nelson at the table. And please move your bill, sir.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and committee. I move that House File 4388 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy.
Representative Nelson, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you. This bill is a rotational grazing pilot program. It would be having a pilot program that would set up rotational grazing systems and just seeing the benefits of rotating through the paddocks. And really what we're trying to do in agriculture is storing carbon, and I think this is a great program and really trying to utilize resources to be able to expand more of this. So with that, if there's any questions, I'll be here, but I think there's some testifiers as well.
First up is Hannah Bernhardt. Step up to the table, state your name, and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hannah Bernhardt, and I run Medicine Creek Farm in Pine County. And this is my son, Harvey, who's on spring break this week. I raise grass-fed beef and lamb and pastured pork and direct market all my meat products to enthusiastic Minnesota customers. My customers buy from us specifically because they value our regenerative grazing practices, which benefit soil health, wildlife habitat, water quality, and animal welfare. So I'm glad to share my excitement and full support for establishing a rotational grazing incentive program at MDA, along with the support of both the Minnesota Farmers Union and the Land Stewardship Project. Briefly, for those unfamiliar with rotational grazing, this is a soil health practice that uses temporary electric fences to subdivide pastures into smaller paddocks. Livestock spend a day or two grazing the paddock before moving to the next, and then aren't allowed back into the area they grazed until the grasses have had time to recover and regrow. It may sound like a simple idea, but it has amazing benefits for grass-based ecosystems because it mimics nature in the way that bison graze the tall grass prairie. I could talk at length about how this improves the environment and the health of our food, but I'll instead invite each of you out to my farm tour each Saturday of the summer, where you can get the hour-long version of my soil health talk. Instead, I'll just say that this program would help our farm and support more of my neighbors in trying out and transitioning to these practices, which in addition to providing public benefits to our state, also make our farm businesses more resilient economically and in the face of extreme weather. From my experience, a cost-share grant for rotational grazing would be immensely helpful because these practices are expensive to implement, particularly when you're just starting out. Establishing a rotational grazing practice can require design, purchasing and installing fencing, installing a watering system, addressing needs for shelter, and even establishing new perennial cover. It also requires more time, education, and intensive management. And when I started my farm, I could only afford raw land and thus had to make huge investments in fencing infrastructure before I could raise a single animal. So a cost share can be invaluable to help get over that initial hump of financing. That said, and important to note, these practices can pay for themselves over time. We know that once investment is made, it'll be easier for farmers and ranchers to continue going forward. It improves the amount of forage you grow, it reduces your feed costs, and it increases your land's carrying capacity so you can feed more people in the future. But as previously mentioned and bears repeating, cost share is worthwhile because we know these practices have a public benefit. They help improve soil health, reduce nutrient loss, improve biodiversity, and make our farms more resilient to both drought and flooding. And I also want to highlight that this has the potential to be particularly helpful to young and beginning farmers. The young farmers in my network are often starting out with livestock because you can add them back to an existing operation, you can start small, or even add grazing on cropland with cover crops. I can think of a lot of new farmers who would take advantage of this program, including my apprentices, who sought out the opportunity to work and learn at my farm because they one day hope to run their own grazing operations. And finally, I know that this is appropriating out of LCCMR, and a new project from the legislature isn't how projects are typically brought forward, but that's why I'm glad that Minnesota Farmers Union worked with MDA to submit a proposal for the upcoming cycle. However it comes about, this would be a meaningful addition to MDA's programming, and I thank Representative Nelson for bringing it forward and for the opportunity to testify, and I hope we can continue working on this idea with you. And I would be happy to take questions.
Thanks, Ms. Bernhardt. Did you say your son's name was Harvey?
Harvey.
Harvey, step up to the microphone there. Can you tell us your favorite part about living on a farm and you're raising cattle, right? What do you like to do to help out?
Every day now I've started... We have a dog. She just got
spayed,
and she has to get taken into our shop every night because it's cold out. It's been cold out, and I help get her out of her pen and take her over there.
Okay. What kind of a dog is she?
I don't know. A livestock guardian dog.
So she protects the sheep.
Well, not yet.
She will.
So do you raise sheep or cattle?
Both.
Okay. Are you calving yet? Lambing?
We'll be lambing in May. We do it outside on pasture.
Okay.
So we got to wait for it to warm up.
Very good. Questions from members? Anybody in the audience? Yeah. Next testifier is Mr. Peterson. Thank you, Harvey. Take care of your dog, okay? Identify yourself, proceed.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. For the record, my name is Hunter Peterson. I serve as the public policy specialist for Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. And I think Ms. Bernhardt and Harvey did a great job covering why this is a great idea and what the benefits of rotational grazing are. So with that, I would just like to state that we strongly support this bill. We also support the project that's being submitted to the LCCMR. And I also would like, on behalf of our friends at the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association, to note their support as well. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll conclude my testimony.
Very good. Questions from members? Chair Hansen.
Well, today is an ironic day because here we're taking money from another trust fund that's in a different committee to fund an ag program. And the value of rotational grazing, I think people know. We've had several LCCMR projects that have been funded over the last 10 years that have looked at this. But, maybe Representative Nelson, I think there's another fund within the ag jurisdiction with general fund where you could find $2 million, but not the Environmental Trust Fund. So, we all voted on the constitutional amendment to dedicate dollars, lottery dollars, to the trust fund. We have the LCCMR, some changes to that bill to make it more accountable. And here we have a legislative appropriation. So I think there's two questions here. One is the appropriation of money from the Environmental Trust Fund, and then there's the actual merits. So if we believe we shouldn't be taking statutory appropriations out of the Environmental Trust Fund, then we vote no. Because if we pass it out of this committee, then we're saying this committee is okay with taking the money out of a different committee to fund a project in our committee out of a constitutionally dedicated dollars, regardless of the merit of the program.
Any further questions? Final comments, Representative Nelson.
Thank you for hearing this bill, and I would encourage you, if you do have a Saturday free, to head up to Finlayson and take a tour on the farm there. I've seen the benefits of rotational grazing. I've known about it, but if you're a science nerd, Hannah will give you the scientific reasons behind it, and I really enjoyed it, but it's a great learning experience, and I think being able to see that in person and be able to expand this, I think it's a great opportunity to do good for the environment. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 4388 be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy.
That is a motion from Representative Nelson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails.
Division.
Division has been called for. All those in favor, raise your hands.
How do you know how I was going to vote?
Opposed, same sign. There being seven ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail. And Representative Nelson, your bill is laid over.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And while it's disappointing, I hope that we can still keep working on this. The bill is still in our jurisdiction.
Yeah. And we have a minute here. As we're talking about this bill and about infrastructure and fencing, I can't help but remember the folks in Nebraska who have suffered through hundreds of thousands of acres of grassland fires down there. And talked to a farmer that came through that area, and he commented on it's all pastureland and grassland out there. And most of the fence posts are wooden. So where the fires went, they lost all their fence posts as well, fencing supplies. And it's just a sad thing and amazing thing when you lose the infrastructure to keep your cattle and livestock in. It's a big deal. And this bill would have helped folks here set up their rotational grazing and which is good for the soil, good for the land, and good for the livestock as well. But with that, that's my editorializing for the day. And with that, the next meeting is coming up on Wednesday. And with that, this meeting of the Ag Committee is adjourned.